Hello and good afternoon. Welcome to Midwest Beat. Tom Lounges will be in the studio this afternoon with the daughter of a blues icon, Shirley King, has a 2020 album to chat about and will be performing for the first time in Northwest Indiana in a few years when she joins the Kinsey Report live on stage at the Hobart Art Theater coming up on Friday, September 17th. Along with being a respected and longtime blues singer, Shirley is also a book author. We'll be getting more information on that, and we'll be getting into some deep, deep blues. But all of that is coming up after the news here on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM. It's Midwest Beat. It's 1 o'clock on a Friday afternoon.
Good afternoon, and thank you for listening to Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM on the dial, streaming worldwide at lakeshorepublicradio.org. I'm Tom Lounges, and it's time now for Midwest Beats, a program all about music and the people who make it. Today, we've got a special guest, Miss Shirley King, daughter of B.B. King, a recording artist and performer in her own right. Shirley will be joining us by phone to talk about her latest album, an album called Blues for a King, which is star-studded with special guests. It came out in 2020. We'll also be talking to Shirley about her book, Love is King, and about her comeback to the stages of Indiana after COVID. That's right, we've got a big show with the Kinsey Report and Shirley King and special guest Blues Fuse with Derek Caruso. It's all happening coming up in just a couple of weeks on Friday, September 17th. This is Shirley King because, hey, we're feeling all right now, aren't we? Yes, we are.
Seems I got to have a change of scene. Cause every night I have the strangest dream. Imprisoned by the way it could have been. Myself, I'm feeling all right.
I'm feeling all right. Yes, I am, and I hope you are too on this beautiful Friday afternoon. It's time for Midwest Beat, a program all about music and the people who make it. That was Miss Shirley King. She is a legendary blues artist in her own right, but of course, she is also the daughter of B.B. King. Now, Shirley has released a new record that came out not too long ago, about 2020, and that's what we heard that off of. And we've also got a new book in front. I don't know if it's brand new, but I just recently got it myself, called Love is King. B.B. King's daughter fights to preserve her father's legacy. We're going to be talking with Shirley right now about both of those topics, her new CD, her new book, and also the fact that she's coming back to the stages of Northwest Indiana, along with her old friends, Blues Fuse, which is Derek Caruso and the old C4 band who used to back her many years back. And that show is going to be at the Art Theater on September 17th, along with the Kinsey Report and, of course, Derek Caruso and company. Shirley, are you with us?
I am with you. Yes, I am. I am right here in my bedroom, laying relaxed and listening to your show and listening to me. I love to hear me.
I love hearing you too. This has been fun catching up with you the last couple of days here and getting ready to do this show here at the Art Theater. Just so you know, I've got Samantha Muffet in with me. She is the head of the Blue Steel Blues Society. They're a nonprofit that supports local artists and educates about the blues. And say hello, Samantha.
Hello, Miss Shirley. How are you?
Hello, Miss Samantha. How you doing? He can't lose with the stuff he used. He got double S today. Supernatural. Okay.
That is right. Well, we're here to talk to you about Blues for a King, first of all. I recently got a copy of it a couple months ago. I had ordered it online when I heard that it was out. Now, it came out in 2020 in the midst of the pandemic that we've all been going through. How are you marketing this? It's on Cleopatra Blues, which is through Cleopatra Records in L.A.
You know, it's a miracle that it took me forever. I mean, I've been on the blues circuit for 30 years. I was dancing for 21, then I stepped over into the blues circuit. Did all the good stuff I could do and couldn't get nobody pay me no attention for a CD. And all of a sudden, a record label said, "Hey, look at this girl. She ain't doing nothing. Let's put our record out here." And they started working on it in 2019, and we all hyped up about releasing it on one of our grand celebration days, Juneteenth. And so it's all like in the making of what we going to do with that CD being out there and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Virus hit. Nothing. But I had the most wonderful time of my life talking to people interviewing me about the CD and being sorry that I couldn't tour on it, you know, because people were liking certain songs and whatever. And I just end up having a joyful time just doing what I'm doing now, laying in my bedroom talking about it. Oh, my God, did I have fun? You know, I wasn't even out there doing no hard work, just talking about something that I had did that I was pretty proud of, because my father always told me to don't coattail on his name. I guess he forgot to tell everybody else, but told me not to do it, and I was trying to do it and to release the CD that I didn't even have to have not one of my father's songs on there, and to have the great musician, legendary musician, that was put on there by Mr. John Lepton, which is the person
yep.
that got me involved with this. It was like a miracle. I never would have saw it in a lifetime, but it did happen, and it happened at a time where I couldn't go out and tour. But everybody told me they would wait on me, and that made me feel real good. So I feel honored that the CD, you know, did happen. We're still working on tour dates, but, you know, every time we set up the tour dates, the virus gets a little bit worse.
That's right.
So I don't know, but whatever. I always look at it from a good point of view. It's the fact that I finally got a chance to be on a recognized record label, and they didn't, you know, put me in the midst of blues. They kind of rocked me up, and I feel like a rock star, because all the rock radio stations that were somewhat connected with different guitar players that was on the CD was interviewing me, and John Lepton just did a fantastic job of promoting it for Cleopatra Records, and they set me up a Spotify. So these are things that I would have never known how to do by myself.
Right.
I didn't get the guitar players to come play. I didn't do nothing but sing. I got paid to sing. I thought that was all cool, but then when I found out it had to be paid back, I'm crying all the way to the bank now.
Well, I know John pretty well, John Laffin, and he is a good guy, and I'm so glad that he was able to get you back in the scene again and finally get you the respect that you deserve. And just for the listeners, I just want to shout out and nameless and name drop a little bit. On this album, there's 11 tracks. Shirley is accompanied by some great players. Elvin Bishop, who's been on this program. Pat Travers, who's been on this program. Martin Barr of Jethro Tull fame, who's been on this program. Joe Louis Walker, who's been on this program. I mean, these are all people my listeners are familiar with. These are just some of them. There's also Joe Louis Walker. There's Steve Cropper, the great Steve Cropper. Duke Robillard was just featured on the Feeling All Right track, an old Dave Mason tune. And, man, this is an incredible album. Samantha, have you heard this at all yet?
No, but I'm excited to.
It's rock solid, I'll tell you. And like you said, Shirley, it's rock, but it's blues. It's kind of a mixture, and it reminds people that there would be no rock and roll if there had been no blues before, because like Muddy said, the blues had a baby, and they called it rock and roll.
Well, I think, wasn't that Willie Dixon that said that?
Well, Muddy's the one that told me, so you could be correct.
Okay, it doesn't matter. It came from the family of the blues.
It did. And I had a chance to work with Willie a couple of times with his trio and Muddy. And, of course, I got to work with your dad. I think I sent you a picture. I don't know if you got it.
You did.
I was a young pup back then.
I was like, who is this young thing? Who's this young fan thing? Maybe I better go and see if I can find him.
Well, I don't look like that anymore, but I'll tell you, it was a pleasure to work with your dad a couple of times. That was the first time at Point East. And I had interviewed him for Scholastic Magazine. And I was there as a promoter of the venue. And I thought, well, I'll wear my other hat as journalist and I'll see if I can get an interview. And we sold it to Scholastic, which is, of course, an education magazine in the schools. And it was one of the best issues that I had ever done for that magazine with your dad, because everyone was excited.
Wow. Do you still have that interview?
The audio is long gone. I did not preserve it, and that was back in 78, 79, and even if I had saved that tape, it got lost in one of the many floods where I lost a lot of my stuff. But even if I had it, it probably would be pretty deteriorated by now. But I might have a copy of the article. If I can find it, I'll make copy and get it to you.
The reason I was saying that because every year since my father's been gone, you know, my family's still fighting over my dad's stuff, putting it in the hands of the wrong people. But I just keep every year trying to celebrate his birthday, and I'm doing it like one woman show. And so thanks to your show, and all of a sudden it's 30 years of the B.B. King being open on Beale Street.
Mm-hmm.
So all of a sudden now I get a chance to share celebrating my dad's birthday with the B.B. King Blues Club in Memphis, along with your show. And these are places that my dad kind of really kept on the map, because he was in Marysville every year for Easter. It was the best time anybody could say they ever had during Easter time. It was definitely a good holiday.
I was at almost all of those shows. Of course, Bobby Blue Bland, Millie Jackson, all these different people were on there over the years. Every April, it was a tradition to have BB at the Star Plaza. And that was a milestone for me, because one time I went backstage, I think it was just to see if he needed any towels or anything. And he was standing there. We started chit-chatting again. I reminded him about our interview years earlier. And he was like wiping down Lucille. And I said, BB, is it all right if I touch and hold Lucille? And he looked at me and goes, that's like asking me to share my wife.
And well, I thought, you are lucky, because he didn't allow nobody to touch Lucille. So if you got that honor,
I did.
You might have surpassed me in some things.
I remember he let me hold it for like a second and a half. He goes, that's long enough. And he took it out of my hands. We had such a good time. He had such good humor and was just a gentleman in every aspect.
Yes, he was. I miss my dad so much, but he's inside of me now, and I just feel his spirit floating. And when I was doing my interviews, when people would mention, oh, my God, you remind me of your dad. And I just, oh, you want to say, you want to make me smile and make my heart jump? Tell me I remind you of my dad. I should have been a boy because I always wanted to be like my dad. And he used to say, you're beautiful. You're my beautiful daughter. You don't have to be a... I said, yeah, but if I was a guy, then I'd be you. And he would just... but it was still in me to always respect his legacy and let him do as much shining as he can. So the CD came out perfect timing because they gave my father's spirit and legacy a time to rest and pick me up and take me in that way. And ever since then, it's kind of like a competition to outdo Shirley King. But my dad has always let me know, never compete in this business. Find your unique way and your unique self. And come out here and make a name for yourself. Mm-hmm. So when people come to see you, they'll be coming to see you. You don't have to play Lucille. And I let the world know, no, I do not play Lucille, but I shake a mean hip. And BB can't shake a mean hip. So, you know, we got two things different from each other, but yet and still, we kind of like got the same loving, caring way about our fans and stuff, because I love my fans.
Now, how long have you actually been singing? I know you were in the entertainment business for a while, as you mentioned, as a dancer, and you did a variety of things. And now you're dabbling in actually kind of producing shows. Our one conversation, you were talking about working with some of the famous sons of other entertainers. So you wear many hats. But how long have you actually been performing the blues on stage as far as a vocalist?
I actually got my first break in 18. I stopped dancing December 1889. I had danced for 21 years. I did all the top shows here in the city of Chicago. Never traveled anywhere. All of it was done right here in Chicago at all the famous show clubs in Chicago, in the south, the west, all sides of Chicago. And I just, you know, felt the need to do something that I could travel. So I stopped dancing and went right to the Kings of Mind. And got a break up in there and got on that stage and wooed the crowd and got standing ovation on got my mojo working, didn't know the words to the song. And I realized, I was too excited. I forgot to learn the song. So when I couldn't remember the words and the owner was sitting, Doc Pellegrino, he was sitting right there looking at me like, what is she doing? And I'm like, I'm going to get this job. So I brought my shake dancing into it. I jumped over there and sit on him and shook his glasses off, and I got that job. Yep, I got the job in 1990, and I started singing there as a regular, you know, act. I was almost there five nights a week, doing really well. And when people found out that B.B. King had a daughter singing the blues, they started coming to the Kings of Mind looking for B.B. King's daughter. And I had learned a little bit more then. I had at least learned to speak. The words to the song got my mojo working. Mm-hmm. I was singing that constantly. And I kind of stayed focused with the blues here in Chicago because I didn't do a lot of my father's songs when I was working there. I would, you know, do the Chicago-style blues songs. That's
right.
But I don't know why, but I kind of felt that was my need because I wasn't on Beale Street. I wasn't traveling with my father, so I focused in on Willie Dixon's music, especially. Because I like to be sassy on the stage. I like to express myself. So, got my mojo working. I'm a hoochie-coochie woman and all that. And Wayne Day Doodle, that just seemed to fit me so well.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked there until 1994. But people kept taking me on tour somewhere. And Doc Pellegrino liked his act to stay there because they did promotion all over the world. And if somebody come to see Shirley King and she ain't there, that reflected his business. So I kind of started traveling, but I really enjoyed working at the Kings of Mind because anybody that was anybody would pop up in there. You never knew who was sitting in the audience. And I took that to say it opened the doors for me to sing the blues. And in 1991, I recorded my first album with Jimmy Dockin, which he used to call him Fast Fingers.
Mm-hmm.
I did my album with Jimmy Dockin, and it, you know, it was traditional blues, and I wasn't impressed with it because, you know, traditional blues wasn't really my style, but I was learning, and I didn't know at that point that's what that would mean to me later on in life, because now I have a traditional blues album out. Then after that, I got a chance to get with somebody that had a little money and record me again and call it The Daughter of the Blues, and actually gave me a chance to do all my favorite artists. I got a chance to sing everybody's song. Strictly covered CD. Nothing else on there but all covers. Etta James, B.B. King. I mean, everything was covered, but it was good because it was done with a nice, big sounding band. And, you know, that was the second CD. So the third one, which is this one, it gave me a chance to cross over into some rock areas. Because those songs I would have never selected for myself. You would have never heard me in the studio singing. The songs they picked for me were, are you serious? I'm a blues singer here. What are y'all doing? You know, and John, the sweet guy, he just believes in me. He has a need to tell me all the time, I love your voice. You can sing anything. And I'm like, yeah, John, but these songs are weird to me. I never heard these songs before. And he would, you know, stroke me, and then my dad would come in spiritually and said, you know, when people paying you to do something, to do it the best of your ability. Mm-hmm. And after that, it's up to the record company. So with those two people, my father in heaven and John here on earth, they, you know, inspired me, and I did what they asked, and they took the music, and I didn't hear from it no more until it was released on the CD in Juneteenth, 2020.
Wow. Well, here's a song that kind of took me by surprise. It started out as a blues, country blues song by Arthur Big Boy Crudup, made famous, of course, by Elvis Presley. And you are joined on this by an incredible Canadian guitar rocker, Pat Travers. That's All Right Mama is definitely a song that I would not have expected in your repertoire, let alone to be on this album. We're going to play this now, Shirley, and we'll be back with you right after this. Ladies and gentlemen, Shirley King with Pat Travers. That's All Right Mama Pat Travers in there. That's All Right, Mama. That is Miss Shirley King off her latest album, Blues for a King, released in June of 2020, and finally getting a chance to promote it. It's been played on the radio during the COVID epidemic, pandemic, if you will. But this is the first time I've had a chance to actually focus on it. Shirley is on the phone with us by Grace, and Samantha Muffet of the Blue Steel Blues Society is sitting next to me in studio. Samantha, you're hearing this for the first time. What are your thoughts on her tackling a couple of these rock songs? We heard Feeling All Right, a Dave Mason tune. We heard an Elvis cover there.
Right. No, earlier, I like how you said this isn't something you'd expect from Shirley, and I think it's been great so far. I'm really interested in digging deeper into the album and getting a better view of what she can do. I know she commented that she doesn't normally do traditional blues, and now she came into rock, and she did this with this. So I definitely enjoyed both tracks you've played so far. I'm excited to hear more.
All right. Shirley, for your show that's coming up on Friday, September 17th at the Hobart Art Theater with the Kenzie Report and Blues Fuse, what kind of songs are you thinking of doing? Are you going to be focusing on some of the songs here? Have you talked to Derek about working out the repertoire yet?
You know, actually, I have not, but because it's the day after my father's birthday, I really would like to, you know, showcase maybe a couple of his songs. Of course, everybody always want to hear The Thrill Is Gone.
Right.
I probably would want to do Let the Good Time Roll to open up the show. And then I will definitely go back to my home base, because even though my father was Bill Street brand and whatever, I'm Chicago brand. I started singing blues around all the top Chicago blues artists. I was out there with all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, that means that I love doing Wayne Dane Doodle. I love doing the Hootie Cootie Woman, because I'm the president of the Hootie. And I intend to make Samantha my vice president.
Oh, all right. Okay, get the ladies rocking.
So I want to present a wild night of fun, because, man, I haven't did any shows, really. I would say the last show I might have did that was really feeling good was in 2019. So with all this energy set up in me, I don't know where I'm going
to
go.
Ready to get out there.
I do know I'm going to be the president of the Hootie Cootie Club. I do know that.
So you're gonna resurrect, and you're going to live up to your famous name, the Human Tornado.
I love that. How did you get that nickname?
Actually, I just got that from Tommy. That name actually was a movie that I was in where my butt was more famous than my face, because that's what it focused on the whole movie. It was one of my father's favorite movies. And I goes like, Daddy, you ain't got no business looking at your daughter's butt like that. And so the Human Tornado came from the movie. And I guess I was pretty much a tornado, because I got on there and shook everything I had. And that's what they focus on.
Wow. Now, as you mentioned, you haven't really performed on stage since 19. Like most performers, everyone's been regulated to home. What have you been occupying yourself with? The album's done. You can't perform. What have you been doing for the last year and a half?
Oh, I found a way. I did like everybody else that got tied down. They went home and made movies and came out with new recordings and majorly iPods that won awards and stuff. So I've been doing a little bit of everything to keep myself where people are still keeping connection with me. I do a Facebook Live, and I've originated that regular Facebook Live into interviewing other people and having a show where people can talk to me and laugh and have a good time. I really found a way through the media process of keeping Shirley King out here having fun. I haven't really set it up to sing on Facebook, but I think I'm going to work on that for next week, because I'm still selling my father's birthday. So I'm doing great at home learning new things. Just in case the virus don't want to go away, everybody's going to be looking for Shirley King, because they're going to need some Shirley King party mess. Shirley King ain't no party like Shirley King party. So that's what I've been doing. I've just been focusing on a couple country western people want to produce an album on me. So I guess everybody's trying to test me in a different music genre because the guy that wants to do something with me from Nashville, you know, they're writing these songs and they are very good songs. I never knew that country music had such powerful lyrics. Mm-hmm. I thought blues was powerful. But these lyrics and things that they're putting together and they're building them up just for Shirley King because they kind of listen to what I do and figure out, oh, she's very fast on the stage. Oh, we're going to have to give her a song that she can express herself. And they're giving me some really good songs. So that's what I'm working on right now. I'm working with a producer in Nashville to do about 5 country songs. And I think I'm excited about that because I was scared when I was trying to do this thing, the rock thing. And when so many rock radio stations started calling me, you know, I told them, man, I don't even feel like a blues singer no more. I feel like a rock star. You know, especially when I got the call from Woodstock. I'm like, what? Ooh, y'all waiting on me at Woodstock? Let me get my Janis Joplin and everything ready. But, you know, it was so exciting because John had me doing sometimes 10 and 12 interviews a day. I mean, that was consistent. I never did that before. I've seen my father do it, but I've never, ever have did anything like that. So I think I did maybe about 120-some interviews in less than 3 months, and it was wonderful. It was just wonderful. I started having fun because I think I got a little comedian in me. So I had the DJs laughing and carrying on. They called John. Oh, my God, that was a great interview. We love her. We want to interview her again. I was like, okay. So everything really worked out. I mean, you know, sometimes we don't understand what we're up against, but when God opened up those doors are going to swing so wide, you're just going to be overjoyed at things that you didn't see or predict. Because, like I said, I wouldn't have selected none of those songs on that album. I have never heard of some of those songs. Mm-hmm. Then I had to do research on the guitar players. Because I never met any of the guitar players. Now, Joe, he had called me when my father passed. Out of all the famous people that my dad knew, Joe Louis Walker was the only one called me, asked me how I was doing, and tried to get me connected with his management company. So for him to end up coming back and being on that CD with me, mm-hmm. I was just blown away. So now we're calling ourselves the Brothers and Sisters of the Blues because he did a lot of work with my dad. And our interviews would be, I just got through talking to Joe, and now I'm talking, you know, so our interviews start coming together. So I guess that's a sign that I need to be teaming up with my brother and go out here and do some good shows when the virus kind of, you know, succeed a little bit. I'm not worried about going out there now because I am a 3-stage cancer survivor, and it wouldn't be safe for me to just, you know, try to run out here and don't worry about it.
Right, yeah, you got to be cautious. One of the songs, you mentioned Joe Louis Walker, and he's on 2 tracks here, All of My Lovin', which opens, and also Hoodoo Man Blues, which I really enjoy. But that also features Junior Wells. Now, Junior's been gone a long time. Was that
amazing.
What's that?
That was scary and amazing. You know, because they know about, you know, all this fighting going on in my family and lawsuits and all that. They didn't want to touch nothing of my father, okay? So what they did, you know, to make sure there was a blues structure established in here, because I am a blues singer, they went and got Junior Walker from the grave. I said, boy, it's going to be some angry people in Chicago because Junior Wells is on my album.
Mm-hmm.
They did that. They put the track together, and when I heard it, to me, that's one of the songs I like on there over all except the song that made me, you know, feel like my dad came back in the spirit and was with me. And that's right. The song about, what's the slow song I did on there? I don't have my album cover with me. Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's track 10. And it's, so Joe Louis, he did his parts. Joe Louis Walker did his parts fairly new, but the Junior tracks obviously were old, and they mixed them all together to make this new song.
Yes, that's awesome.
They did.
Wow. And had me singing with Junior Wells, something I never got a chance to do because I knew Junior and I wasn't on the blues circuit, so I wasn't around. And so by the time I went on the blues circuit, Junior had already passed.
Yeah.
So here's a blues artist that I didn't get a chance to meet, but now I'm on an album with doing a duet with it.
That's great. The miracle of technology.
Right.
Wow. This is the song we're talking about. Pay attention, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Hoodoo Man Blues. Junior Wells, Joe Louis Walker, and Miss Shirley King.
Take it from your heart. A third, but I hope.
Hoodoo Man Blues. That is Miss Shirley King along with Junior Wells and Joe Louis Walker. What a great, great song that is. And that's just indicative of the kind of quality you're going to hear on this CD. 11 tracks, all covers with some great guitar players on here. That featuring, of course, Joe Louis Walker. We've got Etta James, which we'll play before we say goodbye to Shirley. Etta James' song, At Last, featuring Steve Cropper. Martin Barr from Jethro Tull, one of my favorite bands, featured on here. We heard Pat Travers, Elvin Bishop's on here, Duke Robillard. Just a who's who of incredible guitar talents on this album. And the album is available. It's called Blues for a King. And you can find it on Cleopatra Blues, which is a division of Cleopatra Records, which is known for releasing some of the great 80s and 90s metal bands. So interesting album to say the least. And it is not Shirley's only album. She's got what, Shirley, four maybe?
I have three albums. I'm working on the fourth one now. The first one is Jump Through My Keyhole. That was the traditional blues album. Then I did a contemporary with a big old band in the studio, which was a covered song album of all the great people that I idolized, that Etta James, and, you know, then I did this one right here from Cleopatra, and the one I'm working on now is going to be more of a, I'm going to see if I can cross in a little bit to that country music, because that seems to be the thing right now.
Yep.
For us. Yeah.
Well, you know, country blues has been around for a long time. Look at Elvin Bishop. He's got that kind of groove going, too. He's a crossover artist.
I didn't know that, because, like I said, none of these guitar players have I ever met, didn't really even, you know, pay attention to those kind of names until they, you know, got dropped on my CD. Then I had to go and start doing research on everybody. And Steve, I was familiar with a little bit, but I didn't know he was, you know, the organizer at Sax and everything. So now I'm really hoping I can get back with him to do some of the Sax, you know, do some tribute to Sax music. Because that's part of the home base that
well. Oh, yeah. Stax was a big deal back then. And
it still is. It's still some of the best music ever recorded.
Right. Well, you mentioned the country stuff you're doing now. Are you recording in Nashville? Because this album, I believe, was Blues for a King was recorded in Chicago, correct?
No, actually what they did, they came up with the songs. They sent me the tracks. I had to listen to the person sing the song and come back behind that and do it my way. They took my vocals here in Chicago in the studio and then took everything to California. And because of all the stuff that was going on, I didn't get a chance to go out there. I really wished I could have went in the studio with live musicians, because I'm much better with live musicians.
Right.
And so everything was done in California, but I did the vocals through a track here in Chicago.
Yeah, the COVID thing really put a damper on a lot of things in the music business, and getting together with people in studio for that live groove certainly was among them. Shirley, there's one thing I do want to talk to you a little bit about that we haven't touched on. That is your book, Love is King. It's a pretty detailed book. It illustrates the fact that, you know, you haven't had a cheesecake life. You've struggled and had a lot of different things going on, and you moved a lot as a child. What prompted you to sit down and put pen to paper, and how cathartic was it to have to go back and relive the good times as well as the bad times?
Actually, Tom, that book was inspired because everybody started seeing all this fighting among the family and people suing B.B. King's name and the state being fought over and the brothers and sisters fighting with each other. It's still going on. 6 years later, it's still going on. But what inspired me to do that book, because I was in show business, I didn't want my dad's legacy to be rubbed down like that. I wanted to find a way to let people know everybody didn't feel the disrespect for B.B. King, that I wanted to show people that I respect my dad, because I was there when my father wasn't B.B. King. Mm-hmm. I was with him all my life. So I took it from a different perspective, and I had a friend that had told me that maybe I could talk about it, because they know how I had been in the business alongside my dad and how I wanted to do this. And they told me about this author. So actually, actually, the author took me up on his wings and got me to tell my story from my dad is in. My real book is coming. That's just the ending of all the fighting and all, and that's the reason I said fighting to save my father's legacy.
Right.
That's what, you know, it wasn't a book about my real life, because that book is coming, because I'm working on that now. I'm working on trying to even do a movie around that, because everybody still wants to know, you know, how it feels to be B.B. King's daughter. And as I tell them, it's been, especially now, because since my father been gone, so many people trying to jump the name and use it for themselves and, you know, don't even want me to exist no more. But I'm strong at knowing who I am through my father. So the stories that I'm going to be able to tell, they're going to be laughable. Sometimes they might get a little sad because, you know, I always felt bad when my dad had to keep on traveling and couldn't be there, you know, to be a father. But he was such a good father. You know, the little stuff that he couldn't do, I didn't get mad at that. And as I got older and got into business, I saw what it meant to have a father that was so ambitious and did all the things he did.
Mm-hmm.
So it was good. It's still really good. Even though things are going on now, you know, the family selected a sister that now should connect with the B.B. King family and do this and do that. And it's, you know, it's aggravating, but at the same time, you know, if you don't have a fight, how you going to get strong? You know, I'm strong because I survived anything that anybody tried to put me through.
Right.
So that book was about that, but I'm not getting paid for the book. So it was a hurry to do something. I can say I have a book out. I'm not getting paid for the book because they kind of ripped me off that way. But it's still inspiring to say I'm an author. You know, all these things go up under my name. Every
right.
time I do something, that's credit for me. So I don't think that this book tells Shirley King's story. What that book does, it talks about Shirley King
mm-hmm.
Surviving being B.B. King's daughter after his passing.
Right. Yeah, this there's a lot in here that shows of how you became such a strong woman. I mean, you went through a lot of ordeals. You had a lot of trials and tribulations over the years, and it's an interesting read, to say the least, and that you came out on the other side very well. You're an entertainer. You had a good relationship at the end with your dad, even though he was kind of absent for a lot of it. I mean, you bring the love that you guys shared, even though it was sometimes long distance and sometimes in between long periods. It comes home in this book, and I look forward to reading the full book when you get that done. And I would love to see a B.B. King story come to film. You know, we've seen it with James Brown, we've seen it with Miles Davis, we've seen it with all these other icons of music. It's overdue to have a B.B. King movie, because he was a cornerstone of American blues.
Tom, I'm glad you said that, and I hope all your listeners are listening to that, because I find that people have been so disrespectful to my father's name with lawsuits. I mean, it was even a lawsuit with the B.B. King Band. It was a lawsuit against who was working with the B.B. King Band. And it just have been like something my dad never did. My dad was never in lawsuits. And even when there was a problem going on, you didn't know it. That's how much respect he got when he was living.
Right.
But the disrespect that's happening to his name now has stopped anything from happening, because one person was to my doing a movie, then they went to get threatened with a lawsuit, so they went somewhere and left it alone. And it hurts me so much to know that my father worked so hard and so long. I mean, his last show, I'm sitting there looking at him going down on the stage in front of my eyes. October the 3rd, 20, I saw that. I was like, I've seen him run to the stage as a little girl. Now I'm sitting here 65 years old, seeing my dad couldn't do it no more.
Yeah, and but, you know, even sitting down as he did in the last couple of years of his life at most of the shows, he still put on one hell of a show. What a showman.
No, this was the last night where he couldn't do the show.
Oh.
Yes, I'm familiar with what she's talking
about. We're talking about October the 3rd when he went down on the stage here at the House of Blues. I was there, and I saw it with my eyes. And
okay.
I saw him not wanting to come on that stage. And I said, it's over, because my father ran to the stage. You could never make him not be on the stage, whether he was sick or dying or whatever. And this particular night, he pulled him back, not wanting to go on the stage. They pushed him out there because they needed to make that money that night.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, he went down. He couldn't do it no more. He just sat on the stage and held his face in his hand because he was too sick to go any further. I was there that night. So wow. A movie on my dad would impact the ending, how sometimes people forget how hard you have worked for them, what all you sacrificed to do this, and then they forget about this and they don't demand nothing. They should be demanding from my family, what's going on with this B.B. King thing? But the reason ain't nobody saying nothing too much, because it has to come from inside to make things happen. People on the outside don't make family history.
Right.
It's the family behind the person. And like I said, I fight alone, and I'm doing what I can. I'm doing my part. But until this B.B. King legacy estate can get it together, we're just waiting. I don't know when it's going to happen because, you know, I'm the oldest daughter, the one been in the show business longest, but I don't get no respect from the family. So
right.
I stay, you know, stay focused. And that's what my dad wanted me to do. He wanted me to stay focused and do what I can do. I can only do what Shirley King can do, but I keep the world on their toes every single day about my dad on Facebook, every single day.
And we are going to celebrate BB on the 17th, which is the day after his birthday. And we're going to make that a big birthday celebration. In fact, I just on the spur of the moment here, Shirley, would it be okay if we got a big sheet cake and just celebrated BB's birthday with you at the art and we hand it out to the audience?
That would be a dream come true. I prayed you would say something like that, but I was going to let you say it because
yep.
I was here going like,
I'm gonna do that. We're gonna get a big sheet cake for BB's birthday, and we're going to have it cut up, and the audience members and the Kenzie fans and everybody, the Blues Fuse guys, we're all going to sing happy birthday to BB, and we're going to put the cake out, and we're going to have the audience share in that. So I think I owe that to BB just because of how kind he was to me over the years. Mm-hmm.
And you know, we should have a screen to come down and show something beautiful about Dad, because I have a report with the Kenzie report going back to when I was a younger girl and their father put me with his son so it could be a different kind of blues show. I was the little dancer with the Kenzie report when Daddy Kenzie put that band together. So I have history with both people you got on this show. And then with the C4, which is now Blues Fusion, I'm the one introduced them out in public to the blues in 50-some parts.
Mm-hmm. Well, Shirley,
it's a family.
As the late, great Coco would say, we are going to have a wang-dang-doodle all night long. We are.
Yes, we
are. And
yes,
we are going to unleash, the human tornado on stage in Hobart, Indiana. Ooh,
Lord, help her. And tell Samantha she's going to be vice president of the Hoochie Coochie Club, so wear her Hoochie Coochie outfit.
Are you ready to Hoochie Coochie, are you?
I'm always ready to Hoochie Coochie.
All right. Shirley, we're going to let you go. We've got Kenny Kenzie joining us in just a bit. We're going to talk to Samantha about her Blues Society, but not before we leave with a final song from the album from one of your heroes and inspirations, Etta James, featuring Steve Cropper. Shirley, I'll be talking to you very soon.
Yes, thank you, Tom, and God bless you and Samantha.
All right, bye-bye.